Hello and welcome to the Welsh Rugby Podcast. I'm your host, Ben James. I'm joined, as ever, by Stefan Thomas. And we've got some very special guests for today's episode. We're deep within the Principality Stadium here in Cardiff. And we're joined by Abby Tierney, the Welsh Rugby Union CEO, and Nigel Walker, the Executive Director of Rugby. How are you both doing? Welcome to the pod.
Yeah, thank you for inviting us.
Good to be here.
Hopefully this is not going to be too taxing an experience. You've got smiles on your face now, and hopefully it remains that way.
Definitely.
For the next half an hour or so.
I think that's down to you and not us.
Arguably so, yeah. As we sit here, obviously we're sort of just over a week removed from the end of the men's Six Nations. We're already into the women's Six Nations. It's an exciting time of the year. What are your feelings overall, having just finished the one tournament and now into the other one?
I think disappointment that we didn't do better in the Six Nations. I often talk about the fact nobody told me when I took on this job just how much even more you would care about the results than I did when I was a fan, and often have my watch telling me to breathe in the middle of a game. And yeah, I think we saw some young players play their heart out, and just disappointed for them, the team, all of us at WRU and the fan base, that we didn't secure a win out of that.
Same question for you, Nigel.
I've been through this process in the WRU a couple of times. It's difficult, isn't it? Because the standard is so high in the Six Nations, and the difference between success and failure is so, so small. And with Italy having their best team ever, Scotland probably having their best team certainly for the last two decades, England are England and could beat anybody on their day. France, just 6 months ago, were considered to be, maybe 8 months ago, considered to be one of the favourites for the World Cup. And then you've got Ireland, who are world number one. It's always going to be difficult. And off the back of a World Cup, where we saw a number of retirements into the World Cup, a number of retirements the other side of the World Cup, it was always going to be a difficult championship for us because we're in transition. And that's not making excuses. Ordinarily, you wouldn't have as many young players in the squad as we've got, let alone how many young players you've got in the team. But they gave everything. They acquitted themselves. We saw signs of improvement. We saw signs which will make us, which encouraged me for the future. Warren is encouraged, which is more important than what I think about the team. And I'm confident over the next year, 18 months, we will turn the corner.
What is the review process of a tournament like this? Obviously, it's the first Wooden Spoon in 21 years, so you'd expect there to be a review process, as with any tournament. What exactly does that involve, and what does it look like?
I mean, so it's my first time, so I'll let Nigel maybe talk through some of the more detail. But from my perspective, you know, I understand there's a review every year after the Six Nations. Clearly, you know, it's even more important this year when we've had the results that we have. Nigel is working really closely with his team on pulling that review together. And I am also, we're looking at it in the broader sense. So, you know, how was the fan experience during it? How much money did we make during it? All of those kind of things. And we'll then be taking it to our board for a really detailed discussion in May that will look at both on the pitch and off the pitch performance.
Obviously, Warren told the press that he'd offered his resignation to after the game. You know, how did that conversation come about, and you know, why did you reject it immediately?
So it was in the changing room after the game. Nigel and I both went down there. It was a very brief conversation. Nigel had said pre the game when he did the interview that Warren had our support. That wasn't going to change after the Italy game. You know, I look around the world. Warren is one of the best coaches in the world. He's got one of the best track records. Why wouldn't we want to be sticking with him and giving him our support? That doesn't in any way mean there isn't going to be a very detailed review and looking at all aspects of the game and our performance. But in that moment, it was human to human. I was giving him my support as the coach.
Was it disappointing, though, that he should divulge a private conversation to the press afterwards?
I don't think so. I mean, I think, you know, when you say private conversation, it wasn't a particularly formal conversation. It was in a changing room with lots of other people walking around and things. So, and if that meant he felt, actually, as you say, it's important to me that Warren has got confidence that he can turn this team around, if that meant he was able to go into that press conference with confidence that he had our backing, then I think that was important.
As you say, the review will touch upon performance, and even if that necessarily doesn't mean a coaching change in terms of Warren, what sort of aspects could it look at in terms of that?
Well, starting at the obvious, you look at the results. You then look at the performance within each game. You look at how those games knitted together. You look at coaches' performance, individual coaches' performance, look at their individual areas. you look at the cohesion and coherency between those coaches. You look at facilities, you look at preparation, you look at everything. It's a 360-degree look. And then hopefully you'll come up with some answers, and it would be great if you come up with that. We did that incorrectly, or we could do that better. If we'd done that, it might have been better than this. So it's the learnings, that horrible American word, which are the most important thing, how you can move it on. And as a coaching group, they are new together. They only got together 14 months ago. So they're learning. That's only the second Six Nations they've been through. I know they've been through a World Cup. And you just put all of those things together and you say, okay, these are the three or four most important things we can take from the Six Nations Championship, and we'll take those into the game against South Africa and the summer tour against Australia.
We are obviously in, you know, as you know, it's high performance and results is everything. We obviously have to appreciate the situation with the regions and all that happened last season. So a lot of it is out of Warren's hands, of course. But at what stage do you start judging on results? I know he's a world-class coach, we know that, but recent results haven't been great. So when do you start saying, look, you've got to start winning now, or we might look elsewhere?
Well, if you're expecting me to say, well, if we don't do this in this time and that and that time, I'm going to disappoint you. Nobody wants to win more than Warren, and results are important at every stage, whether you're going through transition or not. So results are always important.
Can I add two things? I think, firstly, just on the review, it's really good timing this year. I mean, maybe we'll come on to this because we're doing our strategy more broadly for the next 5 years. So also looking at everything, as you've suggested, that feeds into Warren and his team being able to have the best possible result. We've got a really good time because that strategy is going to be published at the end of June to take the learnings from the Six Nations and really embed that in the strategy. That's the first point. And then as chief exec, rugby is no different. It's a business. You are constantly ensuring that you're assessing the performance of your team and do you have the right people in the team. It's really, you know, you don't ever think there's going to be one point when you go, that isn't going to work anymore. It's a constant assessment. Do they have everything they need? Are they delivering the best that they can? Rugby's not unique in that position.
You know, in terms of the strategic review, like obviously we've had a lot of those, and we Orkwell being one of them. And we've had a lot of reviews that have suggested certain changes which haven't been acted upon. Why is this one going to be different to previous reviews?
I'll just give Abby a little bit of thinking time. The Oakwell review was slightly different because it looked at one aspect. Yeah. And I know it's an important aspect, but it looked at one aspect. This is a review of the whole of Welsh rugby, which is why we are consulting as widely as we are. So that's the first thing. I wouldn't be sitting here, and I'm sure Abby wouldn't be sitting there, if we thought this was an academic exercise. Whatever we come up with, we will look to implement those changes in order to give Welsh Rugby a better chance of being a successful business, and within that business, winning games of rugby at senior level all the way down, and then bringing in the whole raft of young boys and girls having their first experience with the game, the first time they pick up the ball at 6 or 7 years of age, and them enjoying that experience and wanting to be with their mates and to build in friendships that will last a lifetime and to build a love with the game which will go on for many, many decades.
Yeah, it is absolutely bottom up, you said. So to answer your question, though, we don't have a choice. And one of the things that I've learned so much since taking on this job and transitioning from being a super fan to being the CEO is rugby across the world is facing once in a generation challenges. I genuinely believe that we're a small enough country where rugby matters more than anywhere else, where if we get in the front foot of that and we make some bold decisions now, we can get ahead of the game. And that is my aim. So if we don't do that, rugby is going to continue to deteriorate in Wales, and we can't afford that, and nobody wants it. So I do think, and I know that there will have been difficult points when I've read all the other reviews, by the way, and there's common themes throughout all of them, so there's not rocket science here, but that we do need to make decisions because we're running out of track.
But one thing that's fairly obvious to me, and you've said it before in that interview, I know you know the one you did with Simon a few years back, that unless we get the regional game right, that, you know, the rot will spread up wasn't it has really, hasn't it? And you know, you look at players like Cam Winnett and Mackenzie Martin and a few others, they're excellent talents, but if you're losing every week at regional level, it's going to be tough, isn't it, to make that step up. I mean, you know, how do you view the regional game now? I mean, how do we get that back on track?
Can I talk a bit about process first and then look to Nigel to maybe talk about some of the detail? So I think firstly, we are working really collaboratively with the region. So they're right at the heart of our strategy as professional clubs, and they're really helping co-create it. So this isn't WRU Group sat in an ivory tower telling the regions what good looks like. And the question we're asking there is, what does good professional rugby look like in Wales? And we're looking right the way from the point actually when a seven-year-old picks up the ball, and that's where a community game board strategy session upstairs, right the way through to what do we need in our academies, what is the sustainable funding model for the regions so that they can compete at the highest levels, you know, what competitions do we want to play in the future. All of those things are on the table, and the clubs around the table having that conversation. And my understanding is from a lot of people I hear that feeling is different than it's felt before in terms of that collaboration and people coming together.
It is cutting a region or merging two regions on the table?
So everything is on the table, but we're right in the middle of the strategy, and we'll come up with some decisions. That isn't our preferred option at the moment at all. We want to find the best possible way we can go forward with all four regions, but that has to be sustainable, and it has to be one that we can, you know, continue to grow, and they've got to be top performing in order to feed the national team. So we've always said at the start of the strategy everything was on the table, but not our preference.
Obviously, to improve, you need to bring investment into the game, you know, because obviously the £4.5 million playing budgets aren't high enough. Are you confident that that the money will start going up in terms of the budget, and you can bring more investment into the game?
Yes, and I wouldn't be sat here doing this job if I didn't. So the idea of coming into a job where you spend 5 years cutting things and reducing budgets and making difficult decisions doesn't kind of get you up in the morning in the same way as turning around and growing a whole ecosystem can. So we're already looking, we've already got ideas, and we're absolutely looking to see how we can increase the funding, and lots of different ways of doing that. And you end up in a virtuous circle, don't you? Because actually, if you have games that are clubs that are competing, you get fans wanting to go and watch it, their revenue goes up, players want to stay, you know, and then with those players you get the heroes who the fans want to come and watch, and it does really start to help. So that's everything we're looking at.
And the only thing I'd add to that is when the announcement was made roughly 12 months ago that the agreement had been signed, it was signed as a flexible framework. We're now in year two, and the intention was all along, the ambition was always along to raise revenue as we went through the 6 years. The reset was necessary. I'm not going to bore people, but it was necessary because we were spending above our means at national and regional level. And before I took up my employment with the WRU, I was on the Cardiff board, and you've referred to the interview I did with a colleague of yours at the time. I stand by that. And nobody disagrees with me within the union. We know we need the regions to be strong. We know they need to be funded at an adequate level. If you're asking me, is 4.5 million enough for us to go and win the Champions Cup? The answer will be no. And I don't think anybody's going to say any different. But we've got to move incrementally up that chart as the money becomes available. And hopefully, if that money is spent in the right way, the regions will become more and more competitive. But we need the regions to develop the players, and they've got a reasonable track record of development players. Could they improve? Of course, every business can improve. And that's why we're targeting and focusing on the academies and ring fencing money for the academies, because we know we've got to grow our own, and we can't afford to have 10% or 15% of players not fulfilling their potential.
Obviously, you mentioned that losing a region isn't a preferred option, but it's feasible that it could be a potential answer in this strategic review, as there are probably many other bold decisions that come to the fore. How do you go about enforcing those bold decisions? Because we've seen, you know, the Welsh rugby's probably been calling out for bold decisions for quite a while, and it's a very difficult environment to enforce it, because everyone has different opinions on things, and, you know, change is very hard to come by.
And it's interesting, isn't it? Because you've got the spectrum of kind of being autocratic and enforcing, or winning hearts and minds. So one of the things that we are trying to do in this strategy is ensure it is evidence-based, because I have been involved in some really challenging restructures in the past involving schools and hospitals. People care passionately about their local schools. People care passionately about their local hospitals. What you have to do in any strategy where there are difficult decisions to be made is make sure, number one, the evidence speaks for itself, and number two, that you're talking, that you're listening, that you're winning hearts and minds, and you're explaining the benefits of the decision that you're making. You also have to think about the big picture and say what is best for Welsh rugby as a whole, as you aren't necessarily going to keep everybody happy. But to reiterate, at the moment, we haven't reached any decisions. Once we know what those decisions are, we can then work out how best to make sure we are out there communicating them, selling them, and then implementing them.
There's been some good ideas that have been put forward to the PRB and what came before it, and it's been very difficult to get people to agree, because understandably, obviously, there's a self-interest, and that's fine to an extent. But how, you know, are we at the stage now where it'll come to a point where people don't agree, and you guys have to really force things through, like David Moffat did in 2003? Are you prepared for the fallout of that? Are you prepared to make those tough decisions that perhaps will upset some people, but it'll be for the greater good of the game?
It was really interesting. I was at our community game board strategy upstairs, and we were explorers. That's all the members of the community game board that represent their districts there. And we were talking about some really challenging things up there. And I think that you've always got, can you imagine, I'm just going to get you a picture of this, 2x2 matrix, impact versus difficulty. So you've got things in that top right-hand box that are really difficult, that are going to have a massive impact. You've got other things in the top left that are going to have a good impact, but aren't that difficult. And then you plan all that out. And then there's two things you've got to think about. Is it worth the difficulty? So is the impact and the evidence going to deliver what you need to do? And if you can absolutely believe that, then that gives you the courage to make the bold decision, even if it's hard at the start. I didn't come in to keep everybody happy. That's, you know, not, you can't do that. But I think the second part of that is, when you're thinking about that picture, is making sure that over the 5 years of a strategy, you're not trying to do all the difficult stuff right up front, and you actually take the time to bring people along with you, and you do it in a managed and measured way. So the shape of the strategy gets you to where you get to, but you don't try and do everything in the first 3 months. Does that make sense? But are you asking me if it's right for Welsh rugby and the evidence suggests it's right, am I willing to make difficult decisions? Absolutely.
This probably goes back to the more imminent review, but I suppose Warren's relationship with the regions and how much time him and the Welsh coaches have spent around there, is that something that would fall under that more imminent review of the tournament and something you're looking at?
It's one of the aspects, leveraging the knowledge that we have at our disposal. Clearly, Warren and his coaches are very good coaches, otherwise they wouldn't be in the position that they're in. Can they work more closely, more collaboratively with the regions? Yes, they can. Do we need to work out what that perfect format is? Yes, we do. But having spent time with a region, Abby, Malcolm Wall and myself spent the best part of 4 hours with one region on Friday. And it's not a secret, so I don't know why I'm making it sound as if it's
Ospreys.
I know. I don't know why I'm making it so cloak and dagger. But that's just an example of the discussions that we're having, the open nature of those discussions where everything is on the table and we're all putting our heads together to think, what's the quickest way we can turn this ship around to the benefit of the regions, to the benefit of the national team? And that's the nature of the discussions that we've been having for many months now.
Because obviously in the past we've seen Sean Edwards take on roles at Cardiff, at the Ospreys. He was once linked with the Dragons interim head coach. And I suppose in a year when two of the regions haven't had full-time defence coaches, I know Mike Forshaw has done a lot in fairness, and I think he's highly rated around the regions, but maybe there's been perhaps scope for more of a relationship.
And that's why we're talking about it. It's one of the things on the table. As I'm sitting here, do I know exactly how that's going to play out over the next weeks and months? I don't. But I know we're talking about it, and we will find a way to make sure there's a one Wales plan for rugby and that our national coaches are playing their part.
I suppose another thing that maybe comes under more scrutiny because Wales are losing, and obviously everything comes under scrutiny when Wales are losing, is, you know, Warren spent time in New Zealand over the festive derbies. Now, that's nothing new. Obviously, he did that in his first reign, but I suppose when you've won one out of 10 Six Nations matches, that then becomes more noticeable in terms of how that relationship with the region is. Is that something that the union are happy with in terms of him going to New Zealand for that? And
well, I'm not going to talk specifically about a trip to New Zealand. Are we happy that Warren is fulfilling the obligations within his contract? Yes, we are. And when I read some of those things, it does peeve me slightly. Because as you say, the amount of time he spends away from the job, and everybody needs to have time away from the job, is no different now from the first time he was here. Because he was so successful the first time he was here, nobody mentions it. Well, if you've got principles, your principles are the same on a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday and Sunday.
Well, one of my biggest concerns about the game in Wales is the number of players that are leaving Wales. They're taking up opportunities in, as in not full-time pros, academy players. They're getting obviously offers from Clifton, Harpery, and obviously great for them to go there. But there was not an article on the weekend, I think it was with Kane James, the Exeter Chiefs forward, and it's apparently there's a clause in some of their contracts that even though they're Welsh, that England 18s and 20s get first dibs on these players, that they have to play for them if they're selected. I mean, morally, is that right? Probably not. I mean, is there anything that the WIU can do about that? Any sort of legal challenge or anything?
Well, I don't know about legal challenge. And I saw the article, which was written in your good newspaper, Wales Online. Of course, we're talking about those things, and we're talking about those things internally. We're talking about those things with our international colleagues, and we're talking about those things with World Rugby. We're going to look to defend our position where that's concerned. We want players born in Wales, eligible to play for Wales, to be able to play for Wales. And we don't want any loopholes to be taken advantage of, if there are any loopholes. And we're also going to look, and this is the broader point, I've got three daughters. I wanted them to have the best education they could have. So we're not going to stop. If it's the right thing for players, whether they be male or female, to get their education outside of Wales, we're not going to stop them doing that. But we do need to make sure that the educational offer in Wales is as strong as it possibly can be. We need to look at other things, potentially, like bursaries, like having a stronger relationship with those who will go across the border to make sure that they come back once they finish their studies. We're looking at that whole raft of things. And I'm picking my words carefully because I don't want to set any hairs running. But of course we're looking at that because we don't want to leave ourselves vulnerable.
Are you happy in general with the quality of player that's coming through at the moment? Because I know that under 20 results aren't the be-all and end-all, but they haven't been great, I suppose, in comparison to what they were like maybe 10 years ago. In general, obviously, with your background in high-performance sports, what can we do better? I mean, what's your general thoughts on that?
You are right. Winning is not the only thing at under-20 level, whichever sport you're talking about. But you do need a modicum of success, and we need to work out where that line is drawn. But there are other factors which are equally as important. The environment you create for those players, the targets you set for them, whether they be an outside half, passing off both hands, being able to kick off both feet, certain percentage of conversion, all being able to read a game, all of those things are important. And in those countries, and I'm talking about sport more widely now, where you've got that right, you get a continued conveyor belt of quality sports people who are able to fill the gaps left by those who have gone before them. We're not in that position at the moment, which is why we're putting such an emphasis on the academies and why we're bringing all the brains together to come up with an academy license which stretches the regions and gives us a better chance of producing more players more often of the required standard.
Going back to the Kane James example, clearly Exeter are doing very well out of that pathway, and they've probably been a little bit quicker onto Bucks than maybe we have in Wales, but that's something's obviously changing. You know, if you look at Swansea and Cardiff Met and Cardiff. But I suppose the biggest example of what Exeter done is the Emmanuel Feiwoboso situation. It's a tough one when you see, obviously, a Welsh qualified player playing for England. Were you satisfied that everything possible was done to ensure that he did pull on the red jersey?
Am I satisfied that everything was done? No. And that's not a big headline for you. He ended up leaving. So did we turn over every stone and we, the collective, we turn over every stone. I don't think we did. But I've had conversations with a number of people since, and some of the things that we could have done better last time, we will do very well next time. Can we ever say that a player will never go across the border and never end up playing for England rather than Wales? No, we can't, but we can make it more difficult for that to happen.
Any specific area, or was that a collective sort of
thing? Let me give you one example. If I, and I'm going to be careful because I've had a number of private conversations, if I think of the collective support we offered to Emmanuel around the time he was making his decision, we could have done better as a collective.
Could you have done better recently as well? Because that was a few years back, wasn't it? But obviously, recently, he's, you know, start of this season, he was tearing up the Premiership for Exeter. Was enough done in the months leading up to his Six Nations caller?
To be honest, I think the die was cast by the time it got that far. And you know, conversations took place.
Yeah.
He's obviously a very bright young man. He wants to be a clinician of some description. I don't know him well enough to know exactly. And nothing was going to get in his way. Now, in order to finish his education in Exeter, if he wants to play international rugby, well, England was the only choice he had. That's the position we found ourselves in. So I think it was too late by the time it got that far.
Okay. Will we be... more, you know, like if you look at the Premiership last weekend, Josh Hathaway, I thought he was excellent. Byron Haywood is a bit annoyed. I remember interviewing him when he jumped ship from Wales to England. I know you perhaps don't want to talk about individual players, but he's obviously somebody with international potential. With a player like that, would we already be trying to get them involved? And just because Steve Borthwick seemed to be turning up, and he gave the impression in press conferences he was turning up at Exeter games and chatting to Fayou Abosso and going the extra mile. Would Warren or Rob or whoever really be doing that with someone like Josh Hathaway?
Let's not talk about individuals, because I don't think that's the right thing to do. But one of the reasons for Rob Howley's new role, obviously he's working with the senior coaches and he's a key member of Warren's coaching team, but the link with the under-20s and him mentoring Richard Whiffing, part of the thinking behind that was to ensure that we make the best of those under-20s. Can we stop, or can I sit here and say we'll never have another case where somebody decides to go for to play for England? No, I can't. But we've already made changes which make it less likely, not impossible, but less likely, and we'll continue to look and to review at that area to make sure it is unlikely. And there, I mentioned four or five things earlier. There are a number of things that we're tightening up to make sure that doesn't happen. I had a meeting just this week with Hugh Bevan, interim performance director, and Andy Lloyd, team manager of the under-20s, in that space. And I'm going to get into specifics, but in that space.
I feel like we're hurtling towards the end. I know we're wary of taking up too much of your time. Nigel, you've held a lot of roles in the last few years, haven't you, in terms of different titles? Your current one, you are effectively line manager to Warren.
Warren continues to be line managed by me because that was part of his contract.
Part of the contract?
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's perfect. I mean, what is the sort of relationship? How does that work? I mean, for starters, that's clearly one revelation in terms of something that we didn't quite know. But how does that work, that working relationship?
So, I mean, just to be clear on the structure going forward, future coaches potentially would be line managed by Nigel, but because Warren's contract was quite clear that he was reporting to the CEO, we've kept it like that. It's a really good reporting relationship. I think I'm there if he needs anything. We, you know, regularly chat, but also regular WhatsApps and things as well on specific issues. I think he still looks to Nigel very much in the performance space. So it's more, I would say it's kind of a bit of a matrix dotted line, if that makes sense. So Nigel makes sure that what he's doing more generally on the pitch and with his team is going in the right direction. My job is to make sure overall he's got the support and leadership and any guidance.
We've seen in the last week or so, off the back of the wooden spoon, I think Georgia have suddenly challenged you to a, well, almost like a wrestling death match, wasn't it? A bit of an unofficial Six Nations relegation
playoff.
Interesting
way of approaching it.
had a playful response on social media. But is that something, obviously not with anything on the line, but is that something you're looking at in the future in terms of playing the game?
Well, more generally, that there is a debate within the rugby family about the support for tier two, so-called tier two nations. We are tier one. We're more than happy to play our part as a tier one nation, and the Nations Cup is part of the solution to that, to make sure the tier two nations have an adequate supply of quality competition. To move specifically to Georgia, yes, they reached out to us. We've reached out, and I'm sure that the two of us will be talking in the coming days and weeks.
And then, as we mentioned at the start, obviously we are in the midst now of the Women's Six Nations. A really promising 2023. But I suppose Saturday's defeat to Scotland shows that there's still a long way to go in terms of, you know, you've made it to sort of a certain way, but now the other teams are going to catch up. Italy have obviously offered professional contracts for the first time. Scotland are catching up. Ireland, you know, you can never stand still, can you, in terms of development?
No, you can't. And I think that's exactly the point, is that, you know, we continue to do well, but other teams are catching up. And in the case of Scotland on Saturday, being able to beat us. So we are, as part of the strategy, the women's game strategy is absolutely key to that, to the point that we've actually started that sooner, and then it will dovetail into the rest of the strategy and looking at all elements of the women's game to ensure there's those pathways, there's those support, and that we can really grow that game and continue to compete at the top level is absolutely key.
And then I suppose one final question to finish on, because I know time is short. There's been headlines out of the Netley this week in terms of finances. What is the latest in terms of the Welsh government with the COVID loan?
Do you want me to? Ongoing conversations, and so no decisions as yet. I was talking to them, had a really constructive conversation with them. What day is it this week? On Monday. So we're continuing to talk. A bit more information needed and things, but we should be able to give an outcome soon. But they're good constructive conversations.
Perfect. Well, I think that's all for today's podcast.
Thank you.
Glad to say you both still have a smile on your face.
So thanks, Steph.
Hopefully,
thanks,
it's not been too much of a tough experience for you, but a pleasure having you on both. And if you have enjoyed listening to the podcast, do make sure to leave a review. It really helps us out. But until the next one, goodbye.